When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Be now read the third time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I so move. Thank you.
Affirmative action, gender equity at 2024. I put a question. Honourable members, those in favour of the third reading of the bill, say aye.
Aye.
Those against, say no. Honourable members, the ayes have it. The Affirmative Action Gender Equality Bill 2024. Now, Affirmative Action Gender Equity Act 2024 duly read the third time and passed.
An act to provide affirmative action for gender equity in the public and in the public and private sectors and for related matters.
What time it is, you know who runs the world now? It's women, and we're all excited that that is so. Are you? Send me a message, 055-111-1997. Send us a WhatsApp message. What are your thoughts about the Affirmative Action Bill that was passed by Parliament this week? It's taken more than a decade and some really tough fights to finally get this over the line. There are even those who have raised constitutional issues with it, whether or not the bill seeks to discriminate in favor of women and females, and whether or not that will be struck down by the Constitution, the Supreme Court, in case anybody takes it up. What are your general views about that? Do you think we need this? Do you think this is what is needed to get women up the level we all want them to be after so many years of not getting the opportunities and chances needed to rise up the ladder, both politically, socially, and economically? 055-111-1997. Please do connect with us. And talking about connecting, I have some really interesting minds connecting with us on the show tonight. Jessica Samuana-Najwa is passionate advocate for women's rights and development. Jessica, it's good to have you connect with us on Ghana Connect. Hello, Jessica, can you unmute? All right. Becky Enyonam Ahaji is also a lawyer and a coordinator of the Affirmative Action Bill Coalition. He's been working on this for some time and excited to see it pass. Becky, it's good to have you connect with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Nanaka Kari is in the U.S. where, in the U.S., they have a female vice president. They have women in certain key positions as well. Do they need affirmative action to do this? Is this the right way to go? Nanaka Kari, it's good to have you connect with us again.
Thank you, Kweku.
We expect Redwan Ibrahim Asante to join. Redwan used to do this journalism, and he has some really interesting views. He connects with us pretty shortly. And my name is Kweku Asante. For those of you listening, again, 055-111-1997. I want to hear from you. Do you think this is what is needed? And how do we surmount the implementation challenges that will definitely come with this? Becky, let me start with you. I mean, you've been chasing this for a long time. I mean, reading about this since 2011, going in and out of Parliament. Why do you think it's taking so long to finally get to this point?
Thank you. So the drafting process actually started in 2011, but the bill has actually been to Parliament only once. That was in October 2016. And because it was an election year, it didn't get through the first reading at all, and then it lapsed, and then a new parliament was constituted. So from 2016 right through to 2022, the problem was that we didn't have an active or substantive minister of gender then to get a cabinet approval of the bill. So that's what caused the gap. And then also cabinet was asking for a lot of updates on the bill. And so, as you know, because it's a bill that affects every sector, there were a lot of consultative inputs into it. And that's what kind of dragged the whole process. But thankfully, we had cabinet approval in September 2023. The bill was laid just last year, October 2023. And then this year, thankfully, the bill has been passed into law. And so it was not the case that's been in parliament for all these years. It's just the change in government also kind of alluded to that. And that's how come we have a lag. But then thankfully it has been passed now. So I think it's something to be excited about.
But the Affirmative Action Bill has become almost like a precondition of the IMF and World Bank. In fact, I recall the Speaker of Parliament speaking about that when it came initially under a certificate of urgency, the Speaker of Parliament saying no, they want to take their time and do it. Do you think that if it didn't become a conditionality of these international lending organizations, the government would have been particular about it this much and would have gotten it over the line? Again, we are in an election year.
Yes. So, well, the Speaker of Parliament, he didn't specifically say that our Affirmative Action Bill is a condition of the IMF. That's not what exactly he said. But what we do know is that when it was laid before Parliament under a certificate of urgency, the coalition went to meet with the Speaker. And the reason why he didn't want it passed under a certificate of urgency was that he wanted stakeholder inputs into the bill, into the law. And the thing is, when you go under a certificate of urgency, it means that you don't open it up for the public to make any engagements. It can sometimes go through the whole process, and within 3 months, it should be done. But then the Speaker wanted stakeholder inputs into this law because he believed that was going to affect every sector. So that was the reasoning behind not passing it under certificate of urgency, which on hindsight now, we appreciate the Speaker's direction on that, because when he opened it up, the coalition and other CSOs were able to write their memoranda and make inputs on the bill, which has enhanced the bill, which is now an act that we have. And so, yes, we are in an election year. It's just unfortunate that at the time the bill is passed, it doesn't look like anything can be done when it comes to our elections. But the bill doesn't only cover the legislature. It covers the executive. It covers the appointment powers of the president. It covers the private sector as well. And so for now, we will still take the win, because the bill is not just about parliament or just about political parties or the elections. It's been passed for the women of Ghana who are marginalized in society. So in as much as some of us might want to politicize the bill, it is a developmental bill. It's a bill that's going to ensure sustainable development. It's not about this party or that party or because elections are coming. No, I think this is a bill that the government had wanted to do all this while. It's just taken a long time, I admit. But then the good thing is we are now at the finish line. And so that's more important than anything. Yeah.
Jessica, do you share the optimism of Becky that, listen, this is the magic wand? Of course, it is going to make some difference. Do you share that optimism? Well, we appear to have some challenge connecting to Jessica. We'll get to her pretty shortly. Let me bounce that off to Nanaka Kari. Nanaka Kari, do you share that optimism that Becky has that this bill has what it takes to make the changes and ensure that women are well represented, in terms of the equity with men?
Monumental step taken by the members of parliament. We do agree. Look, diversity, equity, inclusion plays a role in our daily lives, not only in our professional lives, but also in our personal lives. As the MPs laid out, this bill will ensure greater representation and participation of women in decision-making processes and governance across various sectors. But while we are celebrating, I want to make sure that we take a step back and ask ourselves. When I saw the story, the first question that came to mind was, are they also going to provide these underrepresented women the support and the necessary resources that is needed for them to thrive? Because you know what, signing a bill is one thing and actually successfully implementing this bill is another. Well, the bill will take effect after President Akufo-Addo signs it into law. We are here to see how things play out when it actually transfers from paper into practicalities.
Good time now to see if you can hear from Jessica Danajo. Jessica?
Yeah, hello.
Yes,
I can hear you.
I can hear you now. Please let me hear you, your thoughts on this and what are you said, optimism of both Nana Kakari and Becky.
All right. Thank you very much for today. I personally am happy about the passing of the bill. I heard about the bill somewhere last year on ABC News, and I'm glad people spoke before me, and I'd like to side a little with the one who just spoke before me. But the thing is, yes, the bill has been passed, and are the people going to accept the bill? I took time to read the bill myself, and I realized they had put in place various things which will make sure that the bill will be passed successfully and that it will be implemented successfully. There has been the NCC on it, Shuaib is also on it. That is very, very commendable. But the thing is, how do we get the average Ghanaian to understand the bill for ourselves? How are we going to make the women that we are helping, or the bill is set to help, how are we going to make sure that these women will understand the technicalities of the bill also? That's a problem. But then overall, it's a good work done by the ministry. They've done so well. The writing, the wording, everything is perfect. It's impeccable. The way they presented the bill is very, very good. They provided figures even, which will make a reader or someone who just chances on the bill get a pictorial view of how women are underrepresented in certain factions, like in parliament, in the judiciary system, even in credit unions. So this bill is for high portfolio. This bill is not just about politics. This bill is about the everyday life of a woman in every industry that they find themselves in, to make sure that very soon we have the equal 50-50 gender representation across all sectors in the country. Thank you.
Becky, let's poke the bear a bit. In terms of the real issues with implementation. Listen, we have so many laws on our books, very beautiful ones, and sometimes the challenge is how to implement them. This is a very ambitious bill. Do you sense we are going to have implementation challenges, given how we want women to be in a certain position, equity, ministerial? I'll be going through the bill as we go along. Do you sense there are going to be real implementation challenges?
Thanks for the question. This question has come up a lot since the bill was passed. The good thing about the act is that, one, you notice that a gender equity committee has been set up to see to its implementation. Now, this committee is going to be situated at the Ministry of Gender. And if you look at the composition of this committee, it's a multi-sectoral committee. So you have representation from SRAJ, from TUC, from the AG's department, from Public Services Commission. Every sector is represented on that committee. And so what you notice in the bill is, in terms of implementation, is that you're going to have a multi-sectoral committee that is actually going to be actively working to see to the implementation. The second thing you would notice also with that is there are sanctions in the bill if you do not comply with it, okay? And even with the private sector, there are incentives. So, you know, if you want to come up with something that's challenging the norm, it's a carrot and a stick situation. There are people that you dangle the carrot before, and there are some that you'd have to have a stick to kind of get them to conform with. And so what you notice is that it's not just, yes, the bill might seem aspirational, but it kind of has a bite to it, where especially with the private sector, if you do not conform, and even with the compliance, it has to do with, someone was talking about, are we going to create a conducive environment for the women? Yes. You see that in the strategies, things about sexual harassment are addressed. If you discriminate on the basis of gender, a woman can actually apply to the committee. And so there are sanctions in there that's going to make sure it works. The third thing in the bill you notice is that it gives the minister the leverage to come up with what we call legislative instruments. So that LI is practically going to spell out out how the committee will work, and it's practically going to give regulations to corporations and organizations on how to comply with it. And then most importantly, just as we had the Domestic Violence Act, when it was passed, people were thinking, oh, it wouldn't work, it won't be implemented. But you had CSOs, okay, you had a Domestic Violence Coalition, you had development partners that were supporting the Ministry of Gender, that have contributed to the fund and all of that to implement the Domestic Violence Act. So there's not going to be a white elephant. There's not one of those other laws that we didn't think through it and put in structures in place to ensure that it's being implemented. What you notice is that the CSOs, either the Affirmative Action Bill Coalition, which I belong to, has helped throughout the drafting and enactment process. And now we are working directly with the ministry to make sure that this bill or this act, now that it's an act, is actually going to be implemented. So it is, in terms of resourcing, if you look in the act, it specifically says that there's going to be gender responsive budgeting, and the Ministry of Finance is also supposed to provide resources for the implementation of this act. So it is not going to be just one of those acts. It's actually very, if I should use the word, implementable.
I mean, Becky, look at section 14. The government shall ensure progressive gender balance in public.
Yeah, and before we go on, I'm sure you guys are referring to the final act. Bill is not out, so after Parliament is done, they are still yet to finalize it. So if you say section 4, read out the head notes that you have, because if yours still has equality in it, it's been changed to equity. So there are some clauses.
I get it. I sat through the consideration stage. What I have is the latest, not the final one, is the latest. So I know a few places that have been amended, but this specific part that I'm about to read is still in the bill. The president shall ensure, that is section 14, affirmative action and gender equity in governance institutions. The president shall ensure the progressive achievement of the gender equity targets
to set
out in the first schedule in making appointment to the following ministerial positions: Council of State, Independent Constitutional Body. The question I want to ask is, I want to announce, I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate around the table. Why do we need a law to force the hands of a president to ensure there's gender equity in appointing ministers or to making the appointments that he's allowed to make under the Constitution? Shouldn't it all be about competence? So that if it so happens that everyone he wants to appoint is a woman, then they can do so. Why do we need a law to do that?
Okay, just to clarify, we are not forcing the hand of the president. If you look at Article 35, 5 and 6 of our Constitution, it says that in the Directive Principles of State Policy, it says that when it comes to appointments, okay, into the public office, there has to be consideration for gender and regional. There has to be consideration for gender and regional demarcations when you're coming to it. So This law was passed, and then if you look at Article 17.4, which was the basis for the passage of this law, generally Article 17.1 says that there should be no discrimination on the basis of gender. So if Parliament is passing a law, don't favor one gender over another. But when you look at subclause 4 of Article 17, it says that nothing prevents Parliament from enacting a law to address economic, social, and educational imbalance, okay, if there's historical findings that this is what is pertaining in the country. So this law is something that even our constitution has provided for. It realized that there could be a point where you have an imbalance in society, and it's saying that nothing prevents Parliament from enacting a law to address that imbalance. And more so when it comes to appointments, the powers of appointment with the president, the same Constitution and Article 35, 5 and 6 talks about you having what gender considerations and regional considerations in your appointment. And so this law is in line with the Constitution. That same Constitution that gives the president power to appoint is that same Constitution that says that Parliament can come up with the law to guide how those appointments are made to ensure that there are gender considerations to address the imbalance. If you look at even our Council of State, you only have 37 men and 4 women. If you look at, still talking about the executive, if you look at the ministerial appointments, we have over 80 men and a few women. So until a law is passed that has been done, as has been done in other countries, until legislation is used, you realize that the norm is going to continue. The marginalization will continue. The gap will begin to widen. And that is why law is a tool. We signed on to international treaties. If you look at the Convention Eliminating All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, it says that states should provide temporary measures to bridge the gender gap, to bridge the imbalance. We have signed on to the Maputo Protocol, which is a protocol, the African Charter on Human Rights. The Maputo Protocol, it talks about the fact that temporary measures should be provided for. So Ghana has signed on to international treaties, even in our constitution, it provides for this. And so this is not forcing the hand of anybody. This is something that our constitution, which is a supreme law, we decided that if it comes to a point where there's an imbalance, we can come up with a law to address it. And that is what is being done. Women form more than 50% of this of the population of Ghana. But you see that when it comes to key decision-making spaces, like you said, you see that there is a huge imbalance. Look at our parliament, 275, 230 are men, only 40 are women. And even with the coming elections, the 40 women might drastically reduce, because I hear only 44 women are standing for elections across the whole country. And I don't guarantee that all of them will win. And so you need law. Legislation has worked in Sierra Leone. It has worked in Rwanda. It has worked in other countries. We need a law. That is the only way to go about addressing the imbalance.
So
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Danaka Kari, you've heard Becky talk about women in parliament, for instance, and at the top of the show, I referenced that there are only 40-20 on each side in parliament in terms of women representation in the House. Becky makes a good point that there is no guarantee that even in the next election, we're going to have 40 if that number isn't going to reduce. But for instance, when it comes to members of parliament, it's an elective position. The people of Ghana go to the poll and they decide. Women stand, other women do not. In fact, the Electoral Commission gave rebates to women in terms of how much they pay. Do you sense that when it comes to elective positions, there is very little anybody can do, given that people have to go down there and campaign, convince voters to vote for them, and when it comes to things of that nature, a bill can hardly do anything?
You ask such an important question, and that was exactly what I was thinking about. Everything that I'm seeing in the bill sounds good on paper. Let's remember that. On paper, we see all this. A committee will be created to address this and that and that. Listen, this, when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion issue, it's not just an issue in Ghana. This is a global issue. Even developed countries are facing the same issue. Here in the United States, just this week right now, there are some lawmakers that are describing our vice president, who is the presumptive Democratic nominee, as a DEI hire. And when a person is described as a DEI hire, that is an insult to somebody like marginalized people, a woman like me, a person of color, an LGBTQ person, a disabled person, a veteran, somebody who is in a religious minority. All these things are, you know, play a part in almost every country around the world faces this kind of equity issue. So I think my concern is, let's our brakes for a second. Ghanaians are good in putting things in paper. They will list all the good things. Let's wait and see how things unfold in practical. I'm all about, yeah, we see it on paper, but we want to see the tangible results, because it's just like, it's not the law, it's not the be all and all. We need to see. And like, going back to what you asked, Kweku, when it comes to some positions, it's about vote. It's about the voice of people. I don't think a law or a bill will play a part in a member of parliament campaigning for a position or a politician in somewhere campaigning. The law, I don't think the law is going to play, just because a woman candidate and a man candidate is vying for the same position, because there's a law, equity, gender equity law, we have to vote for the woman. It does not work like that, and it will not work like that, especially in a democratic country like Ghana. pump your brakes. We are all excited about this. I think that it's been so long, and you ask a question, why did it take so long? But we are here. Let's look forward. By looking forward while we celebrate, let's take a moment and take actions. Like the example, I just gave you an example, what is going on, making waves, making headlines right now here in the United States, where a woman, an accomplished woman in a high position like our Vice President Kamala Harris, is being called a DEI, meaning that you did not get to that position by your own merit. It was favored to you. That brings to mind, or that brings to, I ask the question. So with this law, are women also going to face, just because we just passed the gender equity law, this woman got that position because the law favors them? There are some challenges. Nothing is perfect. We have to look at the whole picture and take the necessary action in implementing it. Let's just not fall for that paper, all the flamboyant wording in their bill, and this will be done. Let's do it. Let us see you do it, and let's see the tangible results.
Jessica, please hold it there for me. I want to bounce this off to Becky, because she spoke early on about this important point. Becky, you just heard from Nanaka Kari, and you, as I've been following, they use the DEI hire against Kamala Harris in a very pejorative sense, in a sense that they say that, listen, you are not qualified, you are just there as a tokenism. It goes back to the point I raised early on about tokenism. If the president is to appoint women into places, what are we not going to get to the point where people are going to just say that, oh, listen, women are in certain positions because there is just a law that says put women here? For instance, like you said, you talked about the stick and the carrot analogy that you gave early on. Companies, private companies like the company I work in now, can probably say, okay, let me put a woman here, let me put a woman there, so that I can get tax waivers. I mean, the law says if you hire more women, you put women in a certain position, you can get more tax waivers, for instance. Are we not going to get to the point where we put women in places that they may not necessarily be qualified, and this DEI high pejorative words that have been used in the U.S. against no less a person than Kamala Harris, who's been a senator, been a vice president, seeking to run for president? Are we not going to get the same thing here?
Last minute, say.
Yes. Just to answer your question, one thing we all need to realize is it's not that women are not capable. It's not that we don't have capable women. It's not that we don't have very, very skilled women. It's not that we don't have women who have the capacity to stay in those offices, even if you think that they go there because of a quota system. What we need to understand is the system has been disadvantage towards women all this while because of the patriarchal norms. For example, if someone wants to stand as a member of parliament, if you're a man, you don't need your husband's, your wife's consent to stand. Nobody's going to ask you, are you married? Do you have children? Have you finished taking care of the children? No one is going to attack you or anything before you stand. But women face those kind of attacks, and they face those kind of obstacles, and that is why they don't go up for the positions, not because they are not qualified or don't have the capacity to stand for those positions. And that's what we need to understand. Now, one thing you need to understand is if you're coming up with the law to confront something that's a cultural norm, a patriarchal norm, yes, there'll be backlash. But what you need to understand is over the period or over a time, you realize that the norm will begin to conform. Let me give an example. The Interstate Succession Act that was passed years ago. Before then, our cultural norm was like, if you are patrilineal or matrilineal, there's a system by which what the inheritance was distributed. Then we come up with a law that says that no, make sure that children of the deceased are covered, make sure that the spouse covered. Now you see that gradually it has become the norm. Even if someone should die interstate, you go to the courts and you ensure that, look, the children are not taken out just as it used to be. And that is what law does. I'm not saying that immediately we are going to have. That's why even in the law, we are being very practical. From 2024 to 2026, we are working towards 30%. From 2027 to 2028, we are working towards 35%. Then from the rest of the year to 2030, according to the SDG goal, we are working at 50%. We understand that it's going to take a gradual process. And even on the same law, we provide for advocacy. I heard Nana Kakari's concerns about whether people will be sensitized. There is a sensitization component of the law where advocacy has to be done. If you see it, it's one of the factors of the committee. And you have CSOs and coalitions, we've actually been doing the advocacy over the period even before the law was passed. I understand that it's not just going to take legislation. We know it will take legislation, it's going to take policy, and at the same time, it's going to take education and sensitization. But one thing you need to know is you need the law in place so that if you are discriminated against, you can go before the court and say that this action contravenes or contradicts what has been done to me, and you can get relief or seek relief for it. That is what is very important. I think in this moment, we women have to actually be positive and not say that, oh, there's going to be another white elephant or this has been done in the US. Ghana is not the US, okay? Even though, yes, it looks active on the global scale, women, the gender inequalities, everyone gets attacked and everything. But you see that when it becomes the norm, it'll become better. Let me give another practical example. In 1960, the president of Ghana came up with the Inter-Representation of People's Act, where there were special seats for women. And then that was the first time we had affirmative action in Ghana, and 10 women were elected into our parliament. What happened was in 1965, when we had our first election, you see that the number increased to 18.5%. And since 1965, we have not had that highest number of women in parliament. It took an affirmative action to get women there in the first place. And when people saw that the women were working, in the next elections, they voted for 18.5% of them to go in. That is what happens. You get a step in first. You give them a seat at the table. When they start delivering results, no one is going to tell you that you need more women in those spaces. And we are not asking for the numbers just for numbers' sake. It's about a balance of perspectives and expertise at the table. What is the point of having girls in STEM projects? What's the point of universities having policies to admit more girls? What's the point of having girls' education at the tertiary and the basic level? You educate these girls, very qualified women, and then they are there and they cannot be in the decision, they cannot be in the boardroom, they cannot be at the managerial level. That is not fair, because you invest in them, and as a country, we are not reaping from them from the investment, and we are not getting sustainable development. And its research has proven that in countries, especially with the Scandinavian countries, where they are gradually getting towards gender parity, there is a balance of perspective, there's a balance of expertise, and you see that those countries are gradually moving towards sustainable development. If you see during the COVID, it revealed one thing: the countries that were female-led, see how they handled the crisis as men compared to the men. Why? Because women at the forefront handle a lot of things at the home, and they use those same techniques with handling national crisis. So let's not sit here and make it look like this is just an aspirational thing that is not going to be. A lot of research has gone into this. We know what works for our country, and we put systems in place to make sure this law works.
Right.
That's my response to it.
Right. Ridwan, it's good to have a male voice finally that is not mine around this table. Ridwan, what do you make of the bill? I mean, a lot has been said around the table about how important it is to ensuring that women are on the table. That's the last words of Becky there.
To ensuring that women are what?
Are at the table, making decisions that affect them. You have 40 women in parliament. They are making laws that affect both men and women.
That's a facade. Women have always been making or at the table every time. You know, I think we need to situate every conversation into a context. Miss Minda, you know, when some of these things, especially with the LGBTQ opposition, those who vehemently opposed it, talked about it's not part of our culture, or, you know, it's not part of our system and stuff like that. Even on religious grounds, before the religious grounds came in, they said it's not an African culture, you know. And if you go back to, you know, where we coming from and how women have always been dominating and being in the background, I don't know the sort of dominance they want to get, or we feel that this affirmative action bill is going to bring, or put women in the forefront. But listen, the society has been created in such a way that we are all equal, but we are not the same. And because we are all equal, but we are not the same, it means that, you know, we all cannot have things going our way. People will fall, you know, by the roadside, and not everybody can do the same thing. We can only get the same things when we are all the same. You know, the organic nature of everyone should be looked at. Unless we want to make women inorganic. If we want to make women inorganic, then the conversation changes, you know, to a larger extent. You know, so if we really want to be organic, then the conversation will be organic. But then the whole thing will be organic. But if we want to look at it from that under angle, I don't think I can even oppose it because it's coming from an, you know, organic angle, you know, and then everybody's going to win. But what are some of the threats of this whole affirmative action thing? You know, one of the biggest things that they've talked about is reverse discrimination. Reverse discrimination. And, you know, if we don't look at this thing properly, we'll end up committing another gap in society. But already it's been passed. So I don't even know how the argument is going to go like, but I'm looking at how it's going to be effective in our cultural setting. Is that what we're talking about? If we're talking about its effectiveness and how it's going to go, then fine. But I mean, the bill has already been passed. So I think the pros and cons even do not come in here. Unless maybe Ridwan, I missed the conversation.
Ridwan, because I just... Yeah. How do you explain that a country of more women than men, there are more women in Ghana currently than men. In fact, the population census, they tell us that. And there are very few women in decisions. Look at the ministers. Look at the DCs. Look at the MMD. Just look everywhere. Look at our universities. Women in leadership. And like you said, Leon, because men and women are all different, you mostly need the specific gender to be at the table to be able to make points that suits their very person. As far as men, despite meaning so well, probably cannot represent women as much as women can represent themselves. Do you not agree to that?
Women can represent themselves or can represent the society. I'm not getting your question clear, but are you trying to say that because we have more women than men, it means that women must lead? No, I mean, you see, this whole context of affirmative action goes into, you know, the wishy-washy fight of women what was the word? Feminism, right? Feminism. You know, if we go into that conversation, then we are getting there. And a lot of women are emotional about it. But when reality starts biting, they know there are consequences of having, or there are consequences of having women, you know, majority of them leading. There are consequences. And there are also consequences of men leading. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of because they have more in terms of the percentages or the numbers, so they have to have more. Why? Which the question should be, why do you think women do not get there? What are the factors that's preventing them? Is it deliberate? If it's deliberate, what is the rationale behind it? You know, sometimes some decisions are taken and you might not understand the nub of that decision. It was taken after careful consideration. But because we are always into textbook arguments, everything must be written by somebody, everything must be this, some of the things are axiomatic and non-textbook sense. If we don't allow non-textbook sense to reign sometimes, we'll ruin everything. And that's what we are doing gradually. You know, what is it? We go to school. We go to school and a girl is brilliant. Even when we're in school, didn't we have girls becoming class prefects in school? I don't remember any time that when a lady was on top of the class, she was denied being a class prefect because she's a girl. It's never done. When Yas Antwa wanted to fight or prove that she was capable of leading the Ashantis, didn't Yas Antwa lead? Or somebody stopped her? She went ahead. And history recognized. Even it goes down to religious sin. So there are people, when women want to lead, well, when they show capabilities that they are capable of leading, men will automatically respond to it. But when women cannot lead, we don't need artificials or additives to make women lead just because, we need to create something for women to lead because we are many. No. And it's one of the disadvantages of this affirmative bill. It talks about stigma and then tokenism. And we have to be very, very careful. We have to be very, very careful.
Good to hear from you, Ridwan. Becky, if you can respond briefly, then I can go to Nanaka Kari and Jessica.
Yes. So about his concerns about stigmatization and tokenism, I just wanted to respond directly to that. Oh, sorry, let me just start with the reverse discrimination. If you look at how this bill is structured, the policies and programs that are supposed to be implemented until the law until 2030, you see that there is an end point to it. Number one, this bill is gender neutral, and so the use of woman is not even used. You see that it says a person. The only thing is, because women are the marginalized gender, obviously the programs and policies will be targeted at them. And so there's not going to be a point where the woman will now be more in decision making than the men, because the law is gender neutral. And so whether it is male or female, if it ever happens that in a sector or based on a policy, the men now become marginalized, and there's no need to even amend the law. The same law is going to come up with policies and targets to balance it out. And so there's not going to be a point where you're going to have reverse discrimination. Now, secondly, I'd also want to say that over the years, women have been marginalized, and that is because of the patriarchy. That is because of how our society is. That is because of our cultural norms. That is because of how we are oriented and brought up.
I'll let you talk. Because I didn't listen to your opening submission, right?
Yeah.
And because I just came out from the mocks, right? I didn't know how to tackle, you know, the conversation, you know. So
okay,
I did go easy on me a little bit. Not that I'm asking for anything special, right? But just go easy on me. And just give me the benefit of the doubt. Now that you're talking about norms and tradition and cultures, I'm now going to tackle it when I get a chance to rebut or refute, you know, those arguments. But for now, just go easy on me. Maybe I was ignorant because I didn't listen to all of you talk on the issue. So, I mean, just give me the benefit of the doubt. I said some things maybe out of context, maybe.
All right. You did say some things out of context, but I would ignore since you said that. But what I just wanted to say is that when it comes to the concerns people have about reverse discrimination, that is not going to happen. If you look at the text of the law, you realize that the law is gender neutral. And so there's no, and then there's also an end point to the policies and programs. When parity is achieved, the policy or the program stops. And that is how it's supposed to happen. Another thing you need to realize is that this is not to a group of women or elite women somewhere sitting and thinking that they want this bill to be passed. Imagine this was your daughter or your sister. Bill is for your daughter or for your...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sister or for your wife. We are not talking about people who are distant. And if you have a conversation with a woman in your life, they will tell you on a daily basis the obstacles they face. Yes, someone could be smart and be class perfect, but the same person, ask her the obstacle she had to face, is not the same as a man. And that is the reality. Sometimes we sit and because you are in your own world or in your bubble, you don't see the struggles other women are facing. But have a conversation with any CEO who is a female in this country, and they'll tell you the struggles they face. And it was not easy to get there.
Can I cross-examine you, Vicky?
No, let me...
Ridwan, let her finish. I'll come to you pretty shortly, then we can do some messages. We have just about 6 minutes to hit the top of the hour and then wrap up. So if Becky, you can just conclude on this point for me, then I can go to Jessica, come back to Ridwan, and then finish with Nana before Papani joins us with the messages so that we close.
All I want to say in conclusion is that this law is very important. This law recognizes that historically we are marginalized. This law comes up with strategies and policies and plans that's going to help us to achieve gender equity or equality. And more importantly, it's for sustainable development. And more importantly, like you serve as the host. If we have a seat at the table, we can advocate for ourselves. We can come up with policies and plans that benefit not just half of the population, but the entire population. So decisions that will be made will be better enhanced, and we'll have a balance of perspectives for the good of the country. That's all I want to say in conclusion.
Thank you, Becky. Jessica, your hands have been up for some time. I want you to respond to some of the issues that have been raised. If you can do that for me in a minute or two, I'll be happy. We're just about wrapping up. Hello, Jessica. If you can unmute, you are still muted. Jessica Nanajua. Okay, then Nanaka Kari, if you can come in. Jessica.
I'm unmuted now.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so quickly, back to what Nanaka Kari said about it just being laws and no suitable way for implementation. I think there being a law set the road for a new future, which will help address some of the gender disparities that are already existing in the political frame. I am a student politician, and I am privy to some of the things or gender disparities that occur, especially when a female is appearing overly ambitious as compared to the normal culture. And like you said, like Kamala is being called a DEI hire, per the law or the bill that they are assenting, for somebody who will be called a DEI hire in any political situation in Ghana, the person can actually appeal for the matter to be looked in. There are sanctions if people are found guilty of treating someone badly just because the person is a female or just on the gender tickets, let me put it that way. If somebody is mistreated on the gender tickets in the political space, these people will not go unpunished. There are sanctions in the bill for that. And taking a critical look at the bill will actually clear a little doubt on these things, especially if we are being positive. Well, I am being positive because I know for sure that there will be some people that will actually stand, and the bill will provide a reference. That's the whole thing. That's the necessity of the bill. Mm. Because when there is a reference, when there's something to refer to, it's no longer word of mouth. It's no longer by discretion. It's by the law. You reference the law. According to this article, according to this, if you do this, you are found culpable, and this and that and that. Mm. And to read one on saying, when there are certain things, maybe some things have set precedents, and that is why, that's what makes people do that and that and that. I do not think any woman has done anything that will warrant gender discrimination in any form. I personally do not think so. It hasn't happened. If you can give me, apart from Adam and Eve, forgive me if your religion doesn't really talk about Adam and Eve. I know you are Muslim, so I'm not talking directly to you, but
Adam and Eve are referenced massively in Islam. So I think Ridwan will respond to that. Jessica, please hold it there for me. Jessica, hold it there for me. Let's take this. I'll give Ridwan the last word, but Michael, let's take a minute to do some messages that have been coming in. What are people saying?
Quickly, because you give me a minute, I have three messages from two men and one person who didn't disclose his name, so I can't tell what he is. But the first one is from Sami Kumasi. It says, it's good that Parliament has finally passed the Affirmative Gender and Equity Bill. No one should be deceived that this bill is a springboard for our women to occupy the highest position in the land. There was no affirmative action bill, but Yas Antwoord alone in the colonial era took a bold decision to fight for the Ashanti Kingdom. And this one from Engineer Hagen in Akachi South says that it's good the affirmative action bill has been passed by Ghana's parliament. I urge all women in Ghana to mount pressure on the CJ to do the needful to attend to the LGBTQ+ bill before her. Final one, it says about KNUST, UG have female VCs even without this bill. At best, this bill will only fast track this process that we've already seen. But if you ask me, I don't think that we needed this bill for this. It was only time that women will begin to take their position where they've always belonged. They chose the kitchen, now they want to be in the offices. Oh. We can give them that.
Well, I don't see where
that is. Read this message, like, there'll be a lot of comments about it. 3 months.
Okay. I mean, wow. I mean, so Andy Dusty is up next with the library. So, Ridwan, you know Andy Dusty, the time is ticking. Let me give you the word on this, on concluding what the point you were making.
Yeah, Becky, to Jessica, to Nanaka Kai, anybody who speaks, one and foremost, our cultural values are not meant to slide to men. Listen, you need to live in an advanced country to see how the society they are living in is getting collapsed. If you like, Okwesanti, let me give you this example. Just do a poll for all of those living in advanced countries, for them to tell you about how the over-empowerment of some things, or giving right to women to a larger extent, higher right to women to a larger extent with no rules and regulations, has affected our society. People have lost their kids. The family, see, families are broken. I'm talking from Canada, right? I can tell you this is the headquarters of broken homes. A lot of single parents. A lot. Because why? The wife is working.
And you think it's because women were given power?
I'm telling you for a fact, because the woman and the man is working. I'm telling you, Jessica, you don't know what it's easy. It's easy to argue, right? It's easy to argue with me. But I'm saying, some years ago, I would also support this argument. But when you live in a system, I'm on the line now with one guy in Germany, he's listening. When I said Canada, he said here in Germany too. In the UK, the whole families are broken. See, our cultural values, you girls or ladies or women, you should never look down on our society. See, men have gone overboard. That is different.
Well. I think that the conversation is getting easier. I love it, but it's time to run out of the studio. Andy Dusty is up next with the library. And this is a conversation we are going to have. Jessica, I assure you, we are going to have this conversation again. Becky, I'm looking forward to hearing from you again. Nanaka Kari, and then Redwan will come about again with this panel. We are going to do Ghana Connect on TV now. From the coming days, we'll give you details. I'm certainly going to bring this same panel and get some few minds to join us on this. I want to know where you stand. Let's keep this conversation going on social media. Affirmative Action Bill, tokenism, or a real action towards ensuring that women get an equal seat at the table. Equity, that's all this bill is about. Andy Dusty is up next with the library. My name is Kweku Asante. I'll see you again same time next week for Ghana Connect. Have a good evening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.